The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to The Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Paddy and Pete. And Steve unfortunately couldn't make it. You know, it's just a shock of the news. Couldn't bring himself. It was a big surprise to Steve. He came out of blue, you know. And he's just, you know, he's in mourning, you know, Steve.
Inconsolable.
Yeah, he is inconsolable. I tried to speak to him, but he was just crying. I couldn't get anything out of him. He was just crying constantly. And he said, he'd come from nowhere, you know. No, just what is happening? So I said, we can lighten it up on the weekend podcast, Steve, you know. I know, everyone's in grief. You know, it's a huge event, you know. We're going to miss him. DMX was a massive rapper.
There we go.
We all knew it was coming.
But, you know, we all like this rap. He talked to the homies, you know, he really talked to us.
Yeah. I didn't actually have Steve down as a fan, but yeah.
But we're not going to mention the passing of Philip, really, because it's everywhere. It's everywhere, isn't it? It's all over the place.
We can mention it, can't we?
Yeah, yeah. No, listen, you know, he's passed. Right, yes. let's crack on with stocks and shares here, guys. Paddy just, what's up, the picture of a bench that he's made, and no, that sounds quite mundane, but it's finished really nicely. You know, it's the kind of thing you'd buy from a DIY store. You know, it's really done. It's sharp. It's looking sharp, yeah. Pad.
It's a table and bench, looking very neat and tidy, made by his own fair hand. I'm impressed.
Yeah, table and bench. Yeah, there. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of them where don't look too close. Like if you like, it looks good. Its construction is a little bit dicey. It'll be fine. It was more of an experiment.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing you'd see in a big beer garden. You know, you would think, this costs a bit of money.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
That is essentially... Do you remember last year during lockdown I built that that bench press and squat rack in my front room?
Yes.
That is that, basically. Oh, just recycled.
Oh, that's good. Well, you've stopped weightlifting now. That's why we are not seeing you in topless so often. Is that right?
No, I'm currently topless. I'm always topless.
Oh, okay, cool.
So you've changed gym equipment into something you can eat food off and stuff your face.
So I had this huge pile of timber in the back garden, so I thought I'll make a table out of that.
That's good. See, I remember seeing a comedian years ago when I was in London, and just a small little venue it was. And he's from America, but he was a white guy, and he was like in his 20s, but he had an accent like, it's obviously part of the character, but he used an accent like, I like working with wood. There's nothing more satisfying than working with wood. And I think it was a play on the old, winky thing. But he said, you can get a good piece of wood and you can mould it, you can do anything with it. And it was really odd, and after a while you started laughing because you're just obsessed with wood. Wood! Do you understand what I'm saying? Wood! And he just kept saying this, and it was good, but that's what reminded me of when I saw Paddy's bench thing. It just reminded me of that comedian who used to bang on about wood all the time. It's very good. Yeah, nothing good, better than working with wood.
Right. That was 80, that cost me essentially 80 quid. And those things are expensive in garden centres.
Yeah, that's how they make their margin, see? That's a margin.
There's an AIM company in woodland, in garden furniture made of wood.
Yeah, Paddy's wood. There we are. Paddy's impressive wood. STIF is the ticker.
Market cap under 5 million.
Yes. Yeah. But I tell you what, you'd be doing a lot more revenue than most AIM companies at that level. Because honestly, this. I tweeted this out last night. I had a few drinks last night. We always, me and the missus always have a Friday night. Do you know what, Paddy? You took one Line of Duty. We'll get the TV recommendations. But Line of Duty, we were catching up on last night. I know you're liking
it's it. Very good, isn't it?
I said it's a bit mundane at the moment. It's a bit samey. But the missus last night was very funny because. We started watching this series, right? She said, I've seen all this. You were drunk last week, and you didn't remember it. I said, what? I wasn't. What are you talking? And I thought, well, I may have had a few drinks last week when we watched it. She said, he's going to do this now. He's going to do this. And all the way through, she kept saying, you're just so drunk. I said, you talk to me like a rolling drunk on the floor, can't even watch anything on TV.
Correct.
So you were. You said, I've seen all this. Then she said, right, I'm off to bed. Right. I said, what? So, well, I've seen all this. I've seen all this. I can't remember it. You're obviously drunk. Then once you went to bed, actually, I watched it when you were in your office. She really had me going there. But I thought, was I really drunk? So last night I tweeted out, right, and we're going to talk this week about herd immunity, reopening the economy, sell-off opportunities, and I won't tell you when I'm sold. I tweeted this last night. I said, if we spend more time researching the business rather than the share price of the business, we'd be better investors, you know? Because we obsess, because shares are so liquid, you can buy and sell. That's their downfall, pretty much. You know, like when you buy a house, you can't just sell it straight away and flip it over to someone. Sometimes you can, but it's not that liquid. You know, you could have a buyer there. That's what market makers are about. They're in the middle. They'll take the shares off you. If you haven't got a matched buyer or seller, they'll do that. And that's the trouble. You know, you get traders, you know, flipping. They're in it to make money, just to make money on the money, just the share price. Don't care about the business. You know, it's just the share price goes up to 10%. Ooh, 20%. Ooh, I'll do that. Scalp that, flip that, look at the charts. Charts are just part of it, you know? And I keep saying this all the time, people obsess with charts a little bit. No, look at the business, because there's a lot of things that affect the share price. They've got nothing
to do
with
the
business.
It's a lot easier to look at a chart, though, isn't it?
Exactly. People want the easy way. And in fact, someone did say this. Someone just come back to me. Exactly. So what do they say? And they said something about... They said, yeah, it seems charting is seen as sexy, it's inverted commas, side of the market somehow. The secret behind how the magician does his tricks. It needn't be so complicated. As you allude to, I'm sure, a few Sundays after researching a company and buying with conviction. You know, that's how you build real wealth, essentially, is how you research a company. People, you've got to put the work in. That's all I'm saying, you know.
It reminds me of when you hear football pundits talking about what happened when Spurs played Man United 7 years ago, as if that's in some way going to help them understand what's going to happen when they play next. Yeah. It's a very easy way of looking at it. Yeah, of course, like history plays a part, but if you really wanted to understand who's going to win, you've got to really delve into the team and understand tactics and understand the current mentality, which is a lot harder to do from the outside.
Exactly. That's why people
You can look at the data as well, these expected goals and all this nonsense they talk about, but it's actually, you know, dig into the actual fundamentals of the business, that fundamentals of the team, and understand, you know, what the chance of actually winning, rather than looking at all this data, kind of doesn't always stack up.
I agree. Whilst some TA guru scalpers, I see them on Twitter all the time, gain a few hundred quid, maybe even a couple of thousand quid here and there, right? They fail to realise what they're doing is a little bit labour intensive. It's hit and miss. Plus, a tiny percentage of what they could earn if they'd actually invested in a small company at the start and just sat there, let it grow and grow, and then maybe, you know, you can top slice a bit of profit, then look for another company to invest into. That's the way to make money. Just a good company that's going to grow for years and hold on. And trouble is, the share price affects our view of the business, you know, sometimes, and it's happened classically with on the market. Like last week, we talked about that, and, you know, there's been no news. And like I said, when there's a recession on, right, all the financial channels focus on negatives that plays into that narrative, you know? They don't look at the positive at all. And that happens with, we're a binary sort of being, aren't we, humans? We look at all bad, all good. Well, in actual fact, it's a bit of both, you know? It's a mixed picture. It's a bit more complex, but we want a simple story. And so when you look at a company like the market, you know, nothing has changed. Since the last sort of results or pre-trading update we had previously, they're growing. They're fine. They're only at 2.6 times revenue now. They're profitable. They've got cash. That is not a stretch in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
And if you look at Rightmove, of course, they're dominant. They're 24 times revenue. So, you know, there's a little room. And someone said to me about the traffic that each site gets. I said, the thing is on the market, they don't need to attract any more clients or any more traffic to significantly increase their revenue, because many of their, just over a third of their agents are on discounted contracts. They also can roll out this tech-led sort of agent thing, which is up the average revenue per user. So they're on £133 per month average. Rightmove, like £100 per month. So, you know, they're charging their thing. So even if they move up a little bit to £200 per month, it's significant, their revenue base, and it's still way below Rightmove and Zoopla. So, I think sometimes when we see a share price and it starts to go down, people ask negative questions all the time. I say it all the time. You know, what's wrong with this company? There's nothing wrong with the company. It's just the share price is going down. That can happen. That's where opportunities are.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, On the Markets is a bigger company. A lot of the AIM stocks, you know, their share price is driven so much by sentiment, isn't it, in terms of actually where people are putting their money, where people are believing, you know, the next big thing will be. And so I know what you're saying in terms of research the company, don't, you know, ignore the share price. That's right. But at the same time, it's hard to watch that share price grind lower and lower and lower purely because of sentiment. Yeah. But what you're saying is, no, hang in there. It's a good company. Nothing's changed. Research it. Keep on top of the news. Make sure there isn't any unexpected
I mean, we check prices too much, don't we? I mean, we should alter our time frames to quarters and maybe years rather than days and weeks. You know, I mean, that's the trouble.
Hours.
We look at share prices. Oh, we have a couple of weeks of a share price grinding lower, bumps up and goes on. They start panicking. Oh, hang on a sec. You know, if it's going to improve. Like I said, with me, I'm going to wait and see. The reason why I'm in on the market is because I think it's growing. And that when you're investing in small companies, that's what you're looking for is growth. And if it isn't growing, then I'll probably change my mind and get out. But I need to see the next set of figures to see if it's not growing or not. I can't just go around looking at, you know, website traffic or people talking about, you know. I mean, like I said, if you search for bad reviews on the market, you'll find them. If you search for good reviews, you'll find them. So
I think we just got in a bit early, didn't we?
Yeah, but that's
where we got in. It was just hovering above that psychological pound mark where, and so if it was to dip below that, sort of almost naturally it was going to go lower.
I think we got in too late.
Maybe we should have waited until... You think we got in too late?
Well, April it was like 30p or something, wasn't it?
It was rallying strongly. And I mean, I think what would be nice, if you always look at that area where, you know, it dipped went up to... It dipped to like, what is it? 30 pence, right? And then it rallied strongly at 66 and then came back down and retested that 42 pence like in June of last year. That was the time. And then it crossed above the 200-day moving average, and it hasn't done that for a long time. And that was like, wow, this is when it's starting to re-rate a little bit. So,
But if, like, what you're saying is, ignore the share price a bit and you're researching the company, nothing's changed, all that. This is the time we should be averaging down. I know I said this last week and I haven't, but I should really be standing by this and going, yeah, I should average down now because I bring my average down closer to the current share price. And then as and when... hopefully the story prevails, I will see a nice uplift. But
I mean, it's majorly oversold. And what you get, of course, is you get a problem here. You get a vicious circle where you get selling, you know, begets more selling because people worry. Yeah. They say, hang on, the share price is going down. It's like the old classic, isn't it? Why is the stock market selling off? Well, people are selling. Why? Because the stock market's going down.
Yeah.
All right, so I better sell then. Everyone else is selling. I'll just sell. And then it takes a while for people to start saying, oh, hang on, there's some bargains we had here. Is it? Yeah. Oh, I better buy some then. And then people start buying. Everyone starts buying again. And it's just that herd mentality, you know? Sometimes, I mean, I was chatting to Paul Hill, and Paul Hill's very well, you know, every Friday or every other Friday we do a video and a podcast. Yeah. And he's a very clever, experienced investor. He's earned a lot of money from investing. And he did tell me personally how much his portfolio went down last March, and it would scare you. And but he said, just hold on. It's back where it was now. It's fine, you know. And then that's when people talk about the risk of the stock market. That's what it is. It's the volatility. It's not the fact that companies go bust all the time. They don't generally. Most companies don't go bust in the stock market. And I can see even the worst, stinkiest of tiny micro-cap AIM companies who have, you know, a bad sentiment, they go to sort of 0.10 sort of pence, have a rally by 200-300% and get back to where they are, you know? So generally, most companies don't go bust. So you start worrying about things like this.
I think averaging down on the market now, it's not like averaging down on a resource stock that you're waiting for some drilling results.
They have no revenue and no cash. Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean,
So what is the downside of me averaging down now on the market other than the use of that cash? Is it used better elsewhere?
Well, I think it's good. If you look at the average, like I said, from June last year, right, we're now at a June... this is a low of June last year. This is just before after the rally. So it went up to 140. It's now down to 85 pence. That's cheap. I mean, it's getting cheap now. You know, right. Looking at a business, if you want value, it's looking cheap. It's a 2.0... And they're growing. It's 2.6 times revenue. That's very cheap. for a company that's growing. It's, I mean, of course, it's a very competitive area, but the incumbents will suffer a little bit, like right move, and the new startups will challenge them. But it's a lot of money needs to be spent. I've heard a company called Booming that's coming.
Yeah, along. I was just about to say, I've seen the TV ads.
I tried it out last night. It's not very good.
No, and they will talk about these secret things. In the end, you know, they've promised that if initial marketing would say secret properties that no one else sees. Now, there's no secret properties.
Because no, people want to sell their house, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to work that. They'll give you this behind the curtain sort of thing. Oh, listen, we got something no one else has ever thought of ever. But you'll find it become very similar to everything else that's out there. But what they'll have to do is they're burning a lot of money. They'll have to go, but they're not making money now. And on the market is classic for this. They've spent years, you know, on their portal, advertising and investing. And it's only now, in the last, you know, last year, they've started to generate real value. That's real cash. There's only two ways, I keep saying this, there's only two ways a business can get cash. That's either from its operations, where they've got a margin on the costs and the revenue there, and they generate real value, real money, or they have to go to the shareholders and raise it.
I wonder whether it's one of those industries where when one of them advertise, it actually helps all of them out as well. You actually end up advertising the whole marketplace as opposed to yourself individually. Yeah.
I
noticed they have your man from Succession as the voiceover. What's his name? Brian Cox as the voiceover on Booming.
He sells himself out, doesn't he? He's supposed to be a professor.
Great voice.
Yeah. It is.
I was just thinking about what you were saying there, and it's an interesting way of thinking about it with this company. What's the worst that could happen here?
They've got recurring. The good thing is they've got recurring revenue. These people, these agents they have, sign up for, you know, not just like a week or a month. So it's not like a drop. The revenue will drop off. They've got recurring revenue. They sign up for, you know, 12 months to 3 years, you know, so a lot of these companies are
there's a limit to how low it can go, isn't there?
Right now it's worth looking at. You should look at charts for entry, that's all, and exit. You should research the business. Fundamental analysis is what to buy. Charts, pretty much when to buy, you know, and that's why if you look at my filter system, my schedule filter system, the last thing on that, pretty much, I look at is the chart, because if you've got a company and you like it a lot, put it on your watch list. If the share price is risen, put it on your watch list. And I keep trying to say, it's like a bus. You know, the biggest thing that prime investors get wrong is jumping in, fear of missing out because everyone's shouting about a company. That people only shout about a company when it's hot. They don't shout about when the share price is going down.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is treat it like a bus. If the bus is pulled away, don't chase it. There's a bus coming out, and it's not for you. That bus isn't for you. Another bus will be along. In fact, that bus you're waiting for, if you wait enough and you're patient enough, it'll come around again. So, you know, so there's always market sell-offs. There's always company sell-offs. And like I said, at the moment, I'm waiting. I've got a bit of cash. I've top-sliced a couple of companies. Mainly the ones I don't talk about too much, but not my, you know, my favourite core stable holdings. But I've got some cash, and I'm going to wait and sit and wait, because there's a company I've a little bit of scale into, but I want some more of it, but it's risen, and I'm going to sit there, and I guarantee the market will have a sell-off, a correction sometime, so I'll just wait, and then I'll buy it on the down day. I'll buy it when people are selling. When people are saying, oh, everyone else is selling, I'm going to be buying now. That's when I'm going to sit and wait.
Something like on the market is that psychology of it's bizarre, isn't it? Because I was buying in around like 95p a pound, whatever, and at the time thinking, oh, you know, I wish it was 80p, 85p. Now it is 85p, and I'm not buying.
That's exactly it. When people say, when people say they're gonna, I'll get to a pound or whatever, I'll get to a pound, I'll sell this. They don't. And when the market's, in fact, you said, you know, the market's bullish at the moment, time to top slice. Most people don't, because they think it's going higher. And so by top slice, they think, well, why do I give away more profits? I'm going to earn more from this. So that's why the psychology of the market is back to front. You know, we're wired wrongly. When fear is our friend, and I talked about this in the lesson 10 in the investment club, psychology of the market. You know, fear is our friend, but we don't see it. We can't see that, because when everyone's selling and all the headlines are full of, oh, the market has lost $50, $60 trillion in the last hour, and people are selling, and they're showing signs of people selling. And you know, we are herd mentality people. We've got to, join the herd, sell it all. We don't know where it's going. And actually, the shrewd investors, I've been into this for a while, I'm buying. And that's the way it should be, isn't it, really? Because...
Yeah,
and you know, at the moment, genuinely, I've been looking at small cap stocks now, researching, trying to find them every day for weeks, and a couple fit, and I've added them to the watch list. But I feel like it could be, they could be cheaper. They've rallied. A lot of them have. And I think the only thing that, and I said, you know, it's like a bus. Wait. And because it will have a sell-off. We will have a sell-off. And that's the time to pick them up. And that's the time to get into them. And that's at the moment, I won't go back into any of these stocks because they're just too, they've rallied. Everything's rallied a little bit. You know, I think, oh, I'm going to wait. I'm just going to wait.
This is the nice benefit of not so much like having resource stocks anymore, because whilst, you know, like I've lost a lot of money on those shares where you're sitting there waiting for some news essentially, and when the news doesn't come, everything just disappears and the bottom falls out of that company. Whereas with these guys, even if the market is having a shocker, essentially there's still, like, you know, escape rooms are, as we all know, wonderful, and there's a big future for them, as we've been saying for years.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this, we know that this is a fundamentally good company. And the same with most of the ones that I own now. Like, if the market goes down, I'm not necessarily afraid that they're going to collapse because of it.
No. But do you know what? It's like, I've increased my investment in this game many times over. I don't have a couple of 100% up now, but I'm not going to sell that because I know, looking at the value of it and the future value of it and their roadmap, there's still lots to come. Lots to come. I mean, we're at the start. In fact, you know what, boys, this is entertaining. I looked on my little notes here that I use every weekend, and we, a couple of times a while back, we put some targets down, didn't we? And the last I looked down, and the last one we had for Escape Hunt was, when will Escape Hunt hit 20 pence? And we all had a little bet on that. And do you know where we are now? We're close to 40 pence. But looking at it, Paddy guessed March. Pete, you guess April. Steve, you're right, Steve. He's upset. No. He's upset with DMX. Steve guessed February. I guess January. Have a guess when it hit 20 pence.
Was it January?
Yes, it did.
You wouldn't have brought that up for any other reason. you were right.
I know. Do you know what's funny? I thought, oh no, I'm going to love this. Why do I love this?
Let's start it again. When's it going to hit 50p?
Well, do you know, that's what I've done. And do you know, if you look on the Share Pickers, right, Investment Club chat channel, in an Escape Hunt channel, I was a bit bullish last night. I had a couple of drinks, and I was a bit bullish. And I was basically ramping it. But listen, these are all holders. You know, these are all holders. But the difference is, I'm not on Twitter ramping it to anyone who doesn't hold. I'm ramping it to people who all hold. You know, they all hold that. And the reason they hold it is because they see potential in it. So I'm not just, you know, pump and dumping it. I'm promoting it to people who hold it already. And
what a time to be alive. A 50-year-old man sat on his couch on a Friday evening.
In fact, I just saw Callie said there, said, do you want my prediction? I smiled. Callie said, yeah, go on. Someone having a drinky poo. Yes, I was. So I said, I think at the end of this year, Escape Hunt will feature in those top 10 list best performing lists. I think that genuinely. It's come from literally, 6 pence, you know, and now we're at 36 pence. It's going to get, we're not even opened yet. And we are now at the height, you know, we are close to reopening very soon, right? But I said it will feature in the top 10 list. But before that, it will probably be covered by laggard, but mainstream investment publications like the Daily Mail Money section, investor section there, Investors Chronicle, probably a bit in the FT and Shares Magazine, which will increase the buying volume. Because a lot of people are paying attention. The middle-aged guys, I've seen, you know, they think the Investors Chronicle is the Bible, you know? These publications are backward-looking. They look at, you know, results that go back. And so they'll cover them. That'll increase the buying volume. Momentum is never figured into overall SP appreciation or valuation by brokers. That increases buying. And I think generally we're going to do 5 pence a month on the escape. Every month, 5 pence. So, you know, April 35. Look at this. October is 10 pence. November was 15. January 25. March was 30. April is 35. My prediction now is April will hit 40 because of what? 36 pence now. End of this month will hit 40 because we're closing the reopening. And as you know, like selling begets selling. Buying begets buying as well. And they're not overvalued.
What percentage of your portfolio is it now?
Oh, it's a decent chunk. Yeah.
Well, how overexposed are you?
What is overexposure? No, but exactly, what is it? I mean, if you're a sole business owner and you own a business,
you're fully into that. Your strategy said over 10%.
No, but listen, I know, but I've realigned that, haven't I? I've realized that each, I try to get things down into simple to understand formats, you know, and I put figures on things that are quite easy to understand. But it's a, like I said, we just said, life is a bit more complex than that sometimes. You can't just, it's not black and white. It's not, there's grey areas, isn't there? You've got to look at it. Each company has a different risk. Risks are specific to each company, you know? And so when you look at a resource company that has no revenue, that's in, based in Africa, and they're going for rare earths or something, you know, I wouldn't go as exposed on that as I would a company generating real cash flow. And it's based in this country, and you know what the business model is. You know, it's got to abide by certain laws and labour laws. And that. Whereas, you know, if I'm invested in the Congo, in something, you know, looking for lithium or cart or whatever, you know, or graphite.
Can I provide some sort of form of balance to the conversation, though, and just kind of... Just challenge that a little bit, your kind of 5p, another 5p. And look, I'm in this company. I haven't sold any, and my average price was like 11p or whatever. So, you know, it's great. And if it goes up by 5p all the time, like you're predicting, then brilliant. But it's a market cap of almost 32 million now. It's revenue generating, but certainly not profitable yet. It's expanding quickly. It's had very little revenue in the last year, really, to be honest, because of the whole situation. Where is that valuation coming from, and why do you see it escalating forever more over the next few months?
I don't ever more. I'm basing on an EBITDA of £150,000 per site, right?
Yeah.
That, for a brand leader, a market leader, and times that on a multiple times 20, the average for a leisure business is 15. These are not. They're a market leader in a newish area. They have a digital side as well, which is...
It's not that new.
Globally, no. If you look at the market penetration, we know about it. We've been banging on about it. You ask, you know, most people if they've been to an escape room, right? They've probably been once, maybe. Many people haven't at all. They don't know what it is. Honestly, it's not penetrated. It's massive expansion. These people, listen now. Well, you understand something. When you invest in a company, the people, the people at the board of the company have done a bit of research themselves before they went into this area. They know a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I find it. I encourage everyone to do research. But don't challenge the professionals on in their area because they know a bit more about it. Like, you know, I someone's questioning Plarium, for example. I said, hang on, have you looked at the board of Plarium? They've been doing this all their lives. This is their area of expertise. They know the market penetration and they know the likely growth rates of this. Yeah. It's a new leisure sector. It's new.
Go back to your maths then. So you're saying...
But listen, this is a relatively new leisure sector, right? Yeah. And these are going to be the brand leaders in this fast... If you look at their growth, they've got growth.
You're building up to a... justifying a high PE, aren't you?
No, it's nowhere near high PE.
So
that's what I'm saying.
For that reason, I'm not.
I'm saying the average is 15, a multiple of EBITDA 15. I'm doing this on 20. You can easily do it on 30. I'm doing it on 20. So 150K, right? Times 20 each site, you're talking about £3 million per site valuation, okay? That's just on the sites.
That's assuming equal earnings, that each of those sites are, you know...
Some will be more, but the average. Okay. So the average. So you're talking about 50 sites.
But that's not earnings in the past 12 months, is it?
No, but we don't invest in the past.
I know.
Why do you think this has been rallying for like crazy? Because we look at the future. And as yet, if you're basing 3 million per site on 18 sites, which they've got, what's that? 54 million.
No, I get that. But equally, I could just go, I think we should base it on 200 grand EBITDA. You know, it's all just numbers.
But do you know what? You've got to try and value something. But at the end of the day, right, I am not pricing in the momentum that will come with this. Honestly, I believe, if I tell you what I really believe, people think you're just ramping it. Because I believe 150,
I believe 150 is
very conservative. And in fact, I had a chat with a while back, you know, when we talked to Richard, and he's got massive plans for the AR VR side of the business, and they're not even priced into this, and they're sharp guys. So I'm saying 3 million per site, 50 sites, that's 150 million market cap, right? That's five times where we are now, pretty much.
What are their plans for their sites? How many more have they got in the pipeline?
They were going to do 20 by the end of this year, but they're up to 18 already. So that's in lockdown. So I think they'll get to 20 and beyond that. I think this company, they undersell and they'll overdeliver.
There's a lot of cost involved in expanding, isn't there?
By April, five pence a month, right? By April, will be at £1. That's at least three times where we are now. we will get to the value.
April 2022.
April next year. We will get to the valuation.
That is next year.
2022. Yeah, sorry. We will get to the 150 million or 1.50, right, or 150 million valuation way before they get to 50 sites, because that's how the market works. It looks ahead. Yeah. It doesn't look behind.
And like I said, it's fantastic. And if it gets to that level, fantastic. I'm just trying to provide a little bit of balance and trying to understand how realistic that is. And
it's
in that
more,
time frame.
Listen. I don't think it'd be more. I don't think 150 is conservative. I think it'd be over £3. When you become a market leader, look at something like Rightmove. Okay, when you become a market leader, you give them a premium way above what normal valuations are. I'm only doing 20 times P.
You could
reasonably do 50, 600.
What I was going to say, look at the sector, because Rightmove is a slightly random thing to look at. Hollywood Bowl, I think, trades on a PE of 150, doesn't it, or something? It's massive.
Yeah. And also, they are more capital intensive. They are bigger. They get affected more by... and do you know what? Something like Hollywood Bowl, big... You don't understand, when you get leisure companies, people won't buy in, the big investment houses won't buy into a company unless you have cash generation for a year or two at least, right? So the big funds will then start to come on board. When they get above a certain level and they're generating cash consistently for like a year or so, that's when the big institutions come in, and when they start coming in, that's probably going to be start being my exit point. When they're above like 150 £1.50, that's how probably say to Richard or something, say, listen, if there's any institutions want to buy, because that's the way that they won't buy off the market. They won't go direct to the market to buy shares. These institutions, they'll go to the brokers and they'll say, we want to buy some of the shares. So, I'll say, well, do you know what? I'm selling my shares for £2 then. I'll sell two million of my shares for £2, and they'll present no problem. One deal like that through a broker will be done, and that's the way to exit a company if you've started off with a small amount. And some people say, "Well, how are you going to get out of that?" That's how it'll work. That's how I see it panning out. A bigger holder taking my shares off me at a much higher level. So I'm not pricing in the momentum. That's why these companies, these brand leaders, and rally like this and become. Are valued way above their peers because they are the biggest player in the market, and institutions want a part of them because they know they'll be chucking off cash for a long time. Because when you are an institution, you need to invest somewhere. You need to make your money work. So you need to put in something that can generate consistent cash for a long time.
Can I also ask one other thing? Because you're basing that on EBITDA, actual earnings per share, that's used in like a PE, isn't that normally just that's your absolute profit?
But people use EBITDA because it's just a standard. So you can compare other companies in the leisure sector to that. That'll fall in line. Yeah, the PE will fall in line with that. You can do it. It won't be overvalued in a PE either. As long as you use EBITDA, it's fine. Because their capital costs are not massive. So
aren't they though?
Not really, no.
But surely their expansion, the capital expansion...
Yeah, but it costs about I can't remember how much per site now, but it's coming down all the time. And obviously, the bigger you are, that's why...
Quite modular, aren't they?
Yeah, they're modular. But also, the bigger you are, the less it affects economies of scale. I mean, like I said, if I'm an independent guy in an escape room, and I've got one, and I'm earning, 150 grand of cash out of that, EBITDA in a year, and I would need to buy another one, and it's costing me £1 million, that's hard work. To buy another one, isn't it? If you own 10 of them, then that's not such hard work in another one. And the bigger you get, the easier it gets, less capital intensive it becomes, and that's why it becomes more scalable the bigger you are.
But earnings per share is net profit, isn't it? Like when they do that. So EBITDA is...
EBITDA is cash. But that's the most important thing, isn't it? How much cash we generated?
But then the last 12 months, as I've said, we don't really know. The costs. No, but the costs have been going up, and revenue's been going down.
The EBITDA has improved the last 12 months because the costs have got. They've furloughed obviously staff. They haven't got any overheads. That's the biggest overhead from a staff and thing.
And they
haven't
rent of the venues.
Yeah, the rent exactly. So their EBITDA improved last year. They made a loss, of course, 2 million. They're burning about 200 grand a year, 200 grand a month. Okay, and they've got 4 million in cash. They've got about 29 months of runway. So they'll be cash generative way before that.
the critical period is this kind of next period of like unlocking the lockdown and hopefully people rushing to go to escape rooms.
Yeah. No, they go everywhere, aren't they? We can't go abroad. Domestic economy is going to boom.
But I'm just saying that's the critical period, isn't it?
Yeah, like, but I, 2 weeks in escape rooms.
You're in the camp of deramping your shares like Paddy was on the market. People started selling because Paddy was deramping it. Oh, calm down, boys. Listen, this will be a pound a share by next April. Don't worry about that, right? But do you know why? Do you know why? Because people are not looking at the past. They're looking 3 years down the line when they'll have 50 sites and they'll be a global leader in it and they'll be expanding all around the world and they'll be a well-known brand like Hollywood Bowl is, you know, but around the world.
Right, this would be a boring podcast if we just agreed with you and just ramped it. So
I was shouting at you to buy some, literally shouting at you at 7 pence and you were doubting it.
Yeah.
Remember, I was going, buy some shares! Buy some shares! And you were saying, no, I don't know, I'm not kidding. No, no.
And then we bought some and continued to derail and to sort of say we hadn't. Yeah.
Boys, I'll record this. We need a diarist, right? When this is a pound a share by next April, right? I said, see, you're saying, yes, for all the last 3 months when they have had no cash flow and we've been locked down.
Okay, well, hold on.
I saw something called the Wall Street Journal. It's a financial blog that tries to get you sign up to it. It's a bit rubbish. It's written on historicals, right? And I got a Google Alert set up, and I'm set up for Gfinity and all that. And I had an alert from them, and I clicked on it, and they say, Gfinity's legacy has burned lots of cash, and I thought, this company is based, their report, their almost automated report, this was, on the last full set of year results and the year before that. And I thought, and the year before that, actually, 3 years previously, way before John sort of got involved in anything, I thought, there's no way you can base your valuation looking back 3 years. You've got to look forward 3 years. So, and the trouble is, a lot of private investors pay attention to these things. There's a lot of aggregator sites that base their point scoring system or whatever on previous 3 years. Now, if you want to invest in fast-growing companies, they're not going to have a stellar last 3 years reports. They're not going to have that. You know, you've got to be looking at the trading updates, the interviews, the media these companies do now and think, what's their plans for the future? That's where it is. So don't want to think about the future.
No, but okay. So if this time next year we're sat here and it's like, and you're able to go, yeah, look, it's a pound. I'm not debating. I said this earlier. I'm a holder. So it would be fantastic if it's a pound this time next year. I mean, that would be awesome.
I'm
really happy. But what I'll be doing is sat here this time next year going, you know, when we had that conversation, I should have put more in at 35p because of, you know, of that potential. What I'm trying to do right now, a year ahead of that, is go, is there the potential? Should I be putting more in now? Because Justin is absolutely convinced it's going to be a pound. And I just need to understand in my own head whether that's you ramping it.
Like, just do it.
Hang on, one more thing.
No, I'm going to say it. It's 20% of my portfolio now. So it's a big chunk of my portfolio. Yeah. So I definitely want it to go to a pound. Of course I do.
Well, listen now, there's going to be no pullbacks, right, in the next month at least. No, honestly, genuinely, this is the most exciting time of all for escape and shares. This month now before we open, we're 40 days away from reopening the economy, right? It's better to travel and arrive. I guarantee the most. We'll start to really motor now. Stewie the seller is pretty much on gas, on vapor. He's sold out. There's no sellers. There's only going to be buyers now. We're opening the economy. They're going to full steam ahead, back on with their plan to get to 50 sites. We're going to start that within 40 days. So between now and reopening the economy is the share price will be rampant in the next month. I guarantee it. Honestly, people will start buying it. And the more it goes up, the more people will buy. That's the way the minds work of most investors. And that's our psychology, you know.
So, Pete, you're at 20%. Yeah. I'm at 36%.
Right.
You higher or lower than that, Justin?
No saying.
You're higher, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit higher.
You've got it all in.
No, I'm not all in. It's all. No, I've got, you know. No, it's nowhere near all.
Just 90% of it.
It's nowhere near all in. No, it's nowhere near all in. I wouldn't do that because I've got, it's nowhere near all in. It's probably a little bit higher than that. But like I said, if you look at any company, right, and they've been saying this for a while, 50 sites is their aim. That's not BS. They intend to do that, and they probably intend to sell to a bigger company, be taken over by a
Hollywood
big
Bowl.
by a
imagine
big leisure
a combination.
No, by a big equity company or whatever, a leisure company. That'll happen. Honestly, when you've got a leisure
company,
in
the
sector,
ball down the alley and then run down, like slide down it, and then at the other end of the alley, there's an escape room.
Yeah. Well, you realise, you know, when even now we're looking at the market cap of this company, right? It's what 30 million, right? When they have 50 sites and you'll see the brand new everywhere and think, wow, do you remember that was like 30 million only valued at? You've realised, in fact, that's ridiculous how much they, for a footprint they've got. And we were saying this, they're going to get 50 sites. Why, you know, why didn't I believe that at the time? Just go all in. So all you can look at is the value. You think, do you think this will become a 150 million market cap? I do. I genuinely do. And I do, and that's no ramp. That's based on valuations. Now, I'm not planning, I'm not factoring in the momentum that we generated from institutions buying in, from basically people buying when a share price is going well. People buy winners. You know, they don't, and that's the way it works. And so it will, it will way overshoot the target. But I'm just basing that on a valuation, which is a reasonable valuation. So that's why I'm confident. They don't, every report, they've said they're getting 50 sites. You know, if 20 were medium to, they're nearly at that before their target. So, so that's why I see it as one of the lowest risk plays for the small cap sector. It's not gonna. I mean, you're not gonna get 200% in one day like some resource stocks will do because they've got so much copper in the ground. You know, you're never gonna get it out there, are they?
Yeah.
And also, that company's generating no revenue, so it goes up. You don't blame resource companies for having to raise money; they have to, otherwise they die. So they'll release some really bullish news. It'll go up. Then let's do a fundraise quick. We gotta survive.
Was that a thinly veiled attack at Asia Met?
No, no. Any resource company. I mean, you know, that's how they survive. Far. That's how they survive.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Also interesting with them is the franchise model as well, and the sites they've got internationally. I know they've bought a few of them off the franchise holders, but there's only a few in America. They're in weird cities. You would imagine that's an easy way to expand dramatically more than, you know, the sites in the UK very quickly.
Oh, yeah, they will, yeah. And it's very, like I said, very little capital input there. It's not capital intensive at all, you know, franchise sites, and they get revenue from it. So, because they've got all now these modular designs and the licenses to, you know, certain games. So they'll just say, you also got to buy, you know, part of the franchise, of course. It's like if you buy a franchise at McDonald's, you've got to use their meat and their burgers and their branding and all that stuff. So, you know, you pay for that, and that's part of the deal.
You've got to buy their goblins.
Yeah, you've got to buy the goblins and all the stuff, Alice in Wonderland, play at home games and all that stuff. Yeah.
That's it. I mean, at the risk of this podcast purely being about escape hunt, we should probably move on to some other subjects. But it's just an interesting thing to dig into. And I reckon other people listening to this who are also invested like me are looking at it and listening to you and going, well, if that is the reality, if that can become reality, averaging up an opportunity, if you will, it may well be. And it's like, should I be putting actually more in? I know it feels a bit weird because my average is 11p and we're now at 36p. You kind of go, well, I could move my average up to 20p, but it'd still be quids in when it gets to a pound because it's like a hell of a lot bigger holding. But anyway.
Listen. It's like no investment is a no-brainer. And sometimes we are a little too risk-averse, you know.
There's a buck coming.
Yeah, but no, look at Plarium, right? And I said this to Paul Hill on the weekend podcast, on the Friday show. They did a presentation recently, Richard, CEO, Richard Houlihan. And but we've been saying for a long time, you know, maybe it went up and your portfolio was... And this is the problem. When you have a portfolio sitting in the red for a long time and you get to sort of break even, you want to sell something, just, you know, make sure it doesn't go back to the red again. I remember a while back, you had this player and you had a bit in it. And you said, should I sell it? And I said, no, don't, because this is the kind of stock that can transform your portfolio. It's one stock. It's all you need with small caps. And this is, and I said, there's nothing as a no-brainer when it comes to investing. There's always risk. There's always risk somewhere. But, you know, you get companies and investments that are very close to a no-brainer. Plarium, for example, right? It's got tech that's way, you know, supreme, you know, superior to any other comparator out there. I mean, to me, they've done FDA. Someone said, what's the chance of not getting FDA approval? I said, there is a risk there they don't get that. Of course there is, for some reason. And even in fact, Paul, sometimes you get the incumbent putting pressure on the FDA. No one admit it. Putting pressure on the FDA, saying we don't, you know, we don't have this new bit of tech coming in because it'll cost a lot of jobs, a lot of money, and all that stuff. But the difference here is If you look at the expertise on the board, all around the board, they're in this company already. And the biggest, it's an add-on to you know, the MRI scanners. This is an add-on. Yeah. It makes them more usable. In hospitals, MRI scanners are very expensive to buy, of course. So the more they use them, the more the value for money they get out of them. So Plarium's kit is an add-on to the incumbents. So it's not a threat to the incumbents. It helps the incumbents, you know. So GE, for example, one of the biggest manufacturers of MRI scanners, and other makers like Siemens, whatever they are, those big, it helps them, you know. It gives them a better case to sell to a hospital, say, I'll get that kit because you'll use our MRI scanner more, basically. So I think, of course, and I said that for a while, Plarium seems like a no-brainer. It's again, do you know that the COVID-19, long COVID, has increased their market in America by 50%. That's huge.
Yeah.
So it's like, and even before that, it was a big market. And yet, if you want, you know, your lungs analysed properly, without using radiation and all that stuff, and you get a better picture, it's qualitative, quantitative, you know, it's more accurate, then Plarium's the way forward. It really is. I mean, and Richard often says that for some reason, I think it's supposed to be more complex, but lung analysis and pulmonary, it was left in the dark ages a little bit. Everything else has been, you know, all other parts of the body you can analyse in high degree colour 3D, whereas lungs haven't, and we are doing that. And so, yeah, they've got many research papers out there all over. It's about 23 or 24 machines being used in research papers. They're all doing their own papers, and so it's really backed up by the people in those fields, by experts. So it seems like a no-brainer. And I suspect the guy was asking me this because he was going to put all his money into Plarium. Because he said, what's the risk of that? Because he see, you know, people see it as I see it as a billion-pound company if they get it, you know, if they get FDA approval. That's the only hurdle. So, yeah, but nothing's a no-brainer, but there are things that are close to being a no-brainer, but that risk always exists. There's always a risk that exists, isn't there? You know? So that's why you never go all in. You never go all in.
But, you know, you could put a third of your portfolio in Escape Hunt, a third in Gfinity, and a third in Plarium, and walk
exactly
away.
What I've done.
Yeah, well, do you know what? And the more I invest, I realise the biggest winners I've ever had is when I've gone really big on companies I really believe in. And so you mess around and you find these ideas all the time. I'm going to be more disciplined and think, I'm getting a bit of cash together. My next investment, I'll take another 3% of a company that I really believe in. There's no point tinkering around with little, goes here and there. And I won't be like, and that conviction was so big, I can't get the money out because it'll be too illiquid. I can't get the money out because it's too big a chunk. So if the company takes a hit, I'll take a big hit. But that means I've got to do a lot of research and know the risks, you know? And when you have that kind of conviction, it tends to work. You're in it. Like again, trading, I can't trade because I've got to have conviction in the company, and trading is not, you just go in there, jump in and out, jump in. No, I've got to have enough conviction to really risk my money, and I know the reward is there. And so, I mean, look at the times you've done really well on stock. It's when you've had a big chunk in one company that you've had a bit of confidence in, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not just saying just go nuts and check it in. You've got to do a lot of research, and you've got to buy at the right time and all that stuff. And by, So that's why I'm going to wait now, build up a little bit of cash there, and then I'm going to take a decent chunk of a small cap that I believe in, and they're hard to find. You know, I've been looking for and one has sort of ticked the boxes. I'm still not fully convinced on it, but they're hard to find because a couple of times I fake sort of, I'll put some little bit of money in, think, oh, hang on, and discover a bit more about it, and then come back out.
So, false dawns.
Yeah, it's false dawn.
Dawn.
Don't we call it false dawn? We do, because she's such a two-faced car.
That's it. No, interesting. It's an interesting conversation, isn't it? Food for thought.
Yeah, and one thing about Gfinity, again, what's frustrating about that share price is the sellers. That's got nothing to do with business. The business is really improving. I can see it. I can see where it's going to be almost. You know, you get these things where I know where it's going to be. You do your research on it, and everything's improving there. They did that deal with Venatus, and the share price went down, and you realise it's a big block trade. At the end of the day, that someone was selling that. That was held the share price down all day, and all of a sudden, the next day, it popped up. And you realise, these sellers will dry up. It may take some patience. We need some patience. But this is the kind of stock that will pop. It's in a very hot area, and that will be backed up by fundamentals as well. And when it pops, it'll start a really motor. And it'll probably pop after you've lost your patience with it and sold. But I mean, it's one of those things where, oh, I'll sell it. And you just chuck the towel in and it'll rally. But I guarantee you, Gfinity is another one. It's what, 39 million market cap? I can see it above 100 million quite easily, you know, in the next few years, because everything is improving in that company, the metrics, the profitability, the margins, everything. John is doing the right thing. And it's, don't worry about the again, look at the business, not the share price of the business. And it's one of the things I have confidence in, real confidence in it, because I think it's going in the right direction. And it's like, okay, the share price, it messes with your mind, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Ilika's done well this week, isn't it?
Well, exactly. There's one that, you know, we could have gone, oh, well, that's a bit overrated. I'll sell now at £2. But no, it's pushed on up, hasn't it? And had a great bit of news out, didn't it? So that's the reason.
I sold that this week.
What, completely?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Paddy keeps quiet in his cells, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Do you know what? I will. Do you know what? I'm not going to tell people publicly. I've said to people, on the podcast yesterday, I said, if someone asks me one-on-one, I'll tell them if I've sold. I'll be truthful. I'm not going to broadcast what I sell, because what do I get out of it? I mean, when I go to buy a stock, right, I think there's lots of value in it for everyone. When I talk about a stock, I think it's still lots of value. I'll stop mentioning a stock if I think it's overvalued, it's gone nuts, and I think it's way overvalued. I'm not going to keep ramping it, because I think I don't want to burn people or get people burnt. But when I sell a stock, if I say I've sold a stock publicly, all I do is annoy the people that hold it at the moment.
Yep.
And I may be wrong. I've been classically wrong on many stocks. Like, you know,
lots of times. Yeah.
Argo Blockchain, Open Orphan, Powers Energy. I've been wrong on those three. Massive rises, 3,000%, Argo Blockchain. So it's a personal decision when people sell. And largely, when you see people selling, and don't get worried about that, they're selling for personal reasons. So my personal sells are very subjective, you know? And most of the time, I can get the valuation completely wrong, or it's just disappointment. So, yeah, but so I'm not going
to. Argo Blockchain sends a shiver down my spine every time you say it. It's like, man.
Well, oddly, after I said that on the podcast yesterday, I'm not going to tell anyone public. I'm not going to broadcast what I've sold, but if you ask me, I'll tell you the truth. I had two emails yesterday. So Justin, have you sold this? Don't let it bother you. What I sell shouldn't bother you. Really shouldn't. I can be.
In fact, it might be a good sign.
Yeah, I can be classically wrong, and I have been classically wrong many, many a time. And like I said, even the best investors, Buffett sells stuff and it goes up. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. Don't worry. If you convince on a story and you like it, doesn't matter who's selling. If you see a fund selling, it happens all the time. You see, a board of directors selling. Don't worry. Don't worry too much. If the company is still on track with its plans and that's generating real value, stick in there, you know? It's like I did videos on Bitcoin.
You've been right more than you've been wrong, not wishing to blow smoke up.
Yeah, but, no, I know, of course. But, a company I've sold a company, right? But I'm not convinced I'm right in selling there. I've just had a lack of patience. I've got too many stocks. So I want, like I said now, I want to go in big on a stock I have 100% conviction on. This stock I wasn't 100% convinced. And it's because of my lack of knowledge of the sector, essentially. And so I thought, right, okay, what I'm going to do is take the money out, have a nice chunk of the cash, and really go big on a company I'm really convinced on. That's what I want to do. And so it was one of the stocks in my portfolio I wasn't convinced on. And so I may be absolutely massively wrong on it, but I'm happy with that. Doesn't matter. So I'll find something else that I'm convinced of.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? Like you have to console yourself with that and say, right, that, you know, there are stocks which I am 75% sure on, and there are stocks which I'm 50% sure on, and doesn't mean the 50% ones are bad companies or won't do well, but I have to concentrate on the ones that I think have a better chance of doing well quicker.
You can't spread yourself too thin, because like we're saying, that's where you don't get the big gains. Ilika is a good example. Now a market cap of 333 million. You look at it and go, is that going to be a £1 billion company? Maybe.
Has the money been made?
I don't know, yeah. So you may have had made a good move this week and got out on a rise.
I just wanted to concentrate on. So basically now I've got three stocks I'm overexposed in, if we were looking at Justin's last strategy. I'm still in, and I will remain in, I think. But they're just at a smaller level now, which makes more sense to me.
Yeah, but do you know what, though? It is worth, and largely I set up that overexposure. You always be prepared to change your mind or evolve, but I set up that exposure level for more for new investors, you know, as, you know, because I saw lots of people. I saw lots of people going in, you know, putting 80% into like an oil and gas company or all their money into one resource stock. They're, well, calm down, and you shouldn't be like that. When you get to learn the market, you should really go in light. You know, it's like the first purchase on a, if you're going to scale into a company, the first purchase is probably the most important. You know, and so because that's when your emotions are at the highest. And so you can get it wrong. You can really get it wrong. No, I know, but you know, you can really get wrong there. And so when I say exposure, but again, I keep saying diversification. I say this will protect you against risk, but also against reward. So, like, you know, if you have too much, you're not going to make a lot of money. And I see people, you know, investors. I don't know how much big their pot are, but by the language conversation, I assume it's not in their millions. But they've got like 20, 30 stocks. I saw a guy. On Twitter, he said, I treat myself like a fund. And he had like about 30 stocks and a couple of funds. And I said, no, you're not going to make any material gain on that. You're really not. I don't know the size of your pot. But if you want to make a gain, you've got to have, you know, five or sub less than five companies. If you want diversification, buy a fund. It's more efficient. You can't be a fund because it's going to cost you every time you buy a share. You know, these funds, yep. Then you buy one fund and they'll have 100 stocks in it or 1,000 stocks in it, instantly diversified. Now, then maybe have three stocks that you really focus on and want to make money on. But that diversity, so you can have like, you know, you can have a fund take up, say, 40% of your portfolio and then have two or three stocks that you can, that you're convinced on. And then you can make more money than, say, having 20 stocks, you know.
But then the thing, like, so for Paddy, my word of advice around Ilika is that, you know, be prepared for it to, for inexplicably now to double in value.
Oh, totally, man.
But don't, you know, just be prepared for that.
And do you know what? And we're often way ahead of the curve. And I'm not joking that. And that was the same when you had Argo blockchain. Right. I was talking about Bitcoin. Yeah. Bitcoin had rallied. And I said, really, a good way of getting access to that is Argo in an AIM fund. And I thought it was baked in. It wasn't obviously baked in the share price. The Bitcoin went mad, and all of a sudden, by leverage, you know, Argo took off. And sometimes, and same with power. So we were banging on about that for ages. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, years after, these companies move late, honestly. Ilika, I've seen a couple of now reports coming up on solid-state batteries. People will start understanding that, and it'll start catching on, and all of a sudden it'll go a bit mad again. Honestly, it will. Because
I can only use the information that I've got, can't I? So that's in front of me at the moment. That's a company that's already quite big, and for it to double again, as you know, it's already doubled for me. For it to double again seems less likely than some of the other ones. So I'm just going to put my money on it.
That's a good rule of thumb. I mean, it could go to a billion, but like I say a billion now is only it's 330. Exactly, it's 330. So that's three times.
Treble.
Now, so and that create that value there, that 700 million, or, you know, of value is quite hard. It could get, because we know the hype and the hope of that kind of hot sector, the EV. Nothing more hot than that at the moment. It could do it, but again, you're probably as likely to do it in a company sub 10 million, and that can triple before it gets to, like, you know, 30 million, and that's a lot easier, a lot faster.
And as an investor, it is about your personal situation. So for Paddy, it makes sense that, yeah, I can see what he's doing. They're consolidating to a few hopefully big hitters. And yes, he's going to miss out on some stuff, but that ultimately, hopefully, will be a much better strategy for him. So great. You know?
What you need now is a hot little stock pad around about 10 million, or if it's not at the moment, that's the problem at the moment. We are, the market's running a bit hot. S&P hit highs, Dow hit highs. Yeah. It's a bit hot at the moment. What you need is get some cash now, Pad. Sit around. Yeah. You know, have your eye on a company you like. Wait till the sell-off happens, and then buy the people selling. That's it. And then and you wait for the next run-up. And you hold
C4XD.
That.
C4XD. Yeah.
That's the big one.
Do you still have you sold that, Pad?
No, I've still got that. That's going to be an 1,800 bagger.
Exactly. Okay. That's his pension.
Where is it?
I mean, it's already recovered dramatically from where it was. And it's back now to a sort of value for me, which, like, it's not insignificant anymore. So I'm sort of loath to get rid of it.
But
it's only 5% of my portfolio now, so
you've got to have a blue sky stock in there somewhere. Come on, it's going to
absolutely.
They
employ a pirate, for God's sake! Like,
Polar Richard Griffiths.
What sort of forward thinking company is this? Should we call Steve?
Yeah.
Also, while you do that, I'd finally got access to all of my pensions this week. I've got four of them from all the various companies that I've worked for. It's quite interesting looking into the things that they, I mean, they've invested in some horrible companies on my behalf. And
with your money.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how I figure that out. But one of them has been up. One of them is up 42% in the last 3 years, which isn't bad. And I worked out the if they continue at that rate, I'm going to have about £300 million by the time I'm retiring. So
again, a lot of people have done really well, right? I know a lot of people have joined, like Rich Steele, right? He should have joined in after the Dash for Cash. He should have joined in.
Oh, Rich.
And he'd have been. He could have bought any old crap in the market. He could have bought anything and he'd have doubled his money. And yet he's just sitting on the sidelines. He's in our WhatsApp group. We've been threatening to invest for years. He hasn't. And that's why, except the investment club, don't rely on fund managers or these financial advisors to invest for you. Because all they do is they go to Vanguard or one of the new fund managers. They buy a fund. You can buy a fund. You can do that. Doesn't cost you anything. Yeah. But they'll charge you to do that. And in fact, Vanguard's Life Strategy Fund is a fund of funds. It just holds their funds. And it's got 1,300 companies in it. So, you know, and it doesn't cost nothing to buy that apart from the dealing.
There are some that have done really, I don't know how to say the word. Is it Bally Gifford?
Yeah, Bally Gifford, yeah. Well, no, that's quite a well-known fund.
They've done really well over the last three years. Well,
they're a very good fund, Bally Gifford. They're a very good company. I mean, they've got lots of
None of my pensions have got them. I don't understand why. Now that I understand it a bit better, I'm just going to switch the funds a bit. My Scottish widow's pension has invested in a fund which is supposed to track the FTSE All Share, but has performed worse every single year than the FTSE All Share, which seems impossible, but they've managed it.
Didn't Scottish Widows go under?
No, I think he got bought by someone.
Oh, okay.
He got bought by Lloyd.
I think you're saying Scottish Widows, Pete. That's different to Scottish Widows.
Right.
Yeah, Scottish Widows went under. It wasn't a big market for it. Yeah.
Okay, right. Was it, their tartan glass?
It wasn't very transparent.
Right, okay.
It's very dark, isn't it? Very dark. I like turning it a bit dark.
I'm not sure this is going to carry on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right then, should we call Steve?
I called him, but he's not answering, is he? He's very upset. He's not going to pick up.
No, he's not going to pick up.
He's on top of a mountain.
You know, the passing of DMX really hit him hard. And he's up Lord Chalfont's Knob, isn't he, or something like that? Or is it Lord Chalfont? It's one of the Lords.
Up the Badger's Fanny, wasn't it, or something?
Oh, yeah, we're not making this. We're not making this up. It's like literally, these are names of mountains in Miles. Brecon Beacons. I think it was Lord Hereford's Knob and Big Fanny. Big Fanny.
Chalfont's Fanny.
It was called Fanny,
Lady Chalfont's Fanny or something, wasn't it?
Lady Chalfont's? No, Lady Chalfont's. It was just called Lady Chalfont's Fanny.
I don't think it was called that.
And Steve
I mixed them up, sorry.
Yeah, and Steve
said it's a different word in Welsh.
Yeah. And Steve said that's not actually a hill, it's a valley, which makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah,
they go up the valley quite early, don't they?
Yeah. What's that? I said, Steve, we do a podcast on Saturday morning. Do it on Sunday. What's wrong with you? Get your priorities in order. You know, go. You can do that any time.
This is why he never sells anything. He doesn't get the latest news.
In fact, Wales have opened up. They've opened up quicker, haven't they? Wales. They said, decided now. Mark Drayford, we're doing so well on the figures. I am bringing it forward. You can all party. That's what he said.
Yeah,
that's his exact words. All get out, give each other a good cutch and a cuddle and a kiss, and make more babies if you want. It's up to you. You know, me and the missus.
It's up to you.
Me and the missus use a condom. But they brought you forward because the figures are good. And have you seen that herd immunity thing? There's been someone actually posted. This is what got me going. Last thing here. Herd immunity, right? We're hitting that. Is saying this real live modelling from the University of London, I think. Let me scroll down, I get it now. They said we are at that 74.3% level where people who've been inoculated, caught, or built up immunity because they've either caught it or they've been inoculated, we're at that level where there's less opportunity for the virus to spread, of course. Because if you've got, 10 people unaffected, one person with the virus, of course, has got 9 other people it can affect. And that will load up the NHS beds because a couple of those people will be ill or weak immune systems and they'll have to go to hospital. Now, if you've got 8 people already infected and they can't transmit it, only 2 left, it's not a big problem, is it? So you hit the herd immunity. And that's where we're at. And it said that it'll hit it on Monday, which I thought was quite a coincidence considering that's the first tier of the lockdown being eased.
How convenient.
But also someone said, oh, don't worry though, if I were you, because Chile have gone back into lockdown. They've got real problems with deaths, and yet they've been applauded for their vaccination program. I said, yeah, but hang on a sec, hang on a sec. And I hated that. Do you know, ITV put that out, right? Put that out there saying, oh, it's worrying. Chile's gone back, people are dying again. And yet their vaccination program's been doing very well. And I said, oh, hang on a sec. Do you know what? I hate that. They don't give any details. So I looked at it and I read into it. First and foremost, right, Chile's behind us on overall inoculation. We're at like about 50% of the entire population. They're at 37%, which is quite close, you think. So, yeah, it's good, that you think. But hang on a sec. Do you know what vaccination they're using? They're using China's vaccination. Efficacy rate, 50.4%.
Yeah.
Ours is way above 70, right? So the difference in that is, if you've got 10 people there and you inoculate, you know, all of them, and half of them doesn't affect them at all, they go and infecting, you know, five of those people go infect another a load of people. Whereas with us, it's like only two or three. In fact, I think Pfizer now, they're saying it's 100% effective against severe disease. So that's a huge, a significant change in, you know, in
at some point, we need to dial down the worry around cases.
Yeah. And
same as another case anymore. Like,
exactly.
Cases is an almost irrelevant metric now.
Yeah, but also, the media are on the search for the new fear, aren't they? All the time. The new variants, all these new variants, all the Brazilian variants, well, your head will fall off. You know, the Brazilian variant, yeah, your hands will drop off, your legs drop off, and your head explodes. And then, no, it doesn't, right? Pfizer is effective against the Brazilian variant. It's like everyone, iterations and evolutions of the vaccine, it's the same as flu. You have variants all the time. Stop trying to scare us. We're over the big scare. We've got the big hurdle was getting a vaccine, right? There's other things now we've got, you know, therapeutics and all that stuff. So we're over the big worry. We've got an effective vaccine. It's got to be, why is it 50%? I don't understand why it's passable at 50%. Surely you should up that bar to 60%.
Most flu vaccines are only 40%.
Yeah, I know. I know, but there again.
The vaccine is not necessarily like always about preventing, like it just needs to just dial it down a little bit for it to be effective.
But right, so I hate to be, you know, cast judgment, but made in China, always be wary of that, you know.
Right then,
on that note,
but it's 50%. It's like,
I know. That's,
you're fucking losing battle of that. I mean, when you got a flu vaccine, yes, because you've got most people inoculated in the world anyway. So a new variant is not a bad, because it won't affect most people. But when you've got a new virus that you haven't got a vaccine for, surely that bar should be a bit higher, because you need to get through a lot of people quickly. And 50%, you're literally half the people is not affected.
I think they were only expecting 50-60% from these vaccines. Yeah, I think the fact that 90 is a bit real surprise.
Yeah, originally.
Anyway. Right then, I've got to go and have a coffee with Ben and Roman.
Name drop.
Ben and Roman, they own a clothes company or something.
Hello,
Roman, hello, Ben. How are you doing, guys? All right. Have you seen my new bench? Fantastic. You're working with wood, Pad? Yes, I am. I like working wood, yeah.
Okay, then.
Do they listen to this?
Oh, we're still recording, yeah. Okay, marvellous. Cheers, lads. Excellent. Thanks for that. And we'll speak you next week.
Au revoir.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.